You're listening to the Berkman Audio Fishbowl from the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. Each week, we feature conversations with leading cyber scholars, entrepreneurs, activists, and policymakers as they explore the bleeding edge of the internet and technology, democracy, law, and society. For more information on the Berkman Center and for more programs like this, visit cyber.law.harvard.edu.
So, welcome everybody. In addition to being a Berkman Fellow, Herko is also a researcher at the Helsinki Institute for Information Technology. He's a lawyer and he's got a PhD in economics and has worked on and examined the efficiency of Creative Commons licensing, fair use in copyright law, and electronic voting, and has a pretty fascinating talk for us today. So please, Herko.
Thank you. Is my audio on? I'm on. So yeah, I'm excited to be here. I'm going to talk about today about television. Television is really broken. In a sense, it's not rising to its full potential. It's poor in providing what consumers really want. That is to deliver programs when we want them, where we want them, and the programs that really matter. In fact, viewers have to schedule their lives pretty much around television programming. At least that's what the core television proposition is. There's somebody who's setting the schedule, and you have to be at your television to view the programs. There's geographic restrictions limiting where programming can be viewed. Like, for example, I couldn't watch my Finnish television here if it were just the normal television. And television is created pretty much for to be consumed with the television set that's on the wall or in your living room. It lacks interaction with broadcasters. It lacks interaction with other viewers. There are all these commercial breaks that interrupt our viewing with irrelevant ads. It could be so much better. If we think television was invented today, and you would have to pitch it to a venture capital firm, I would say that I would have a hard time getting funding for something that broadcasting signals through air or digging cables into streets and into buildings and doing this geographically limited area broadcasting. That simply wouldn't work. However, that's not the television we're used to, actually. So there's been several improvements to television. One of the early ones was during the 70s when the VCR was invented. For the first time, consumers really had some power, some control over the television. But this made TV networks fearful. And where TV networks' rights owners are fearful, what do? They call in the cavalry. So here we had the first really important decision from Supreme Court, the Sony Betamax decision, and for television broadcasters, the decision was not favorable. So what the Supreme Court said that was that the manufacturers were not liable for direct infringements because the devices had also legitimate purposes and had substantial non-infringing uses. And personal use of these machines to record broadcasts was seen as a fair use. I'm not going to analyze the Sony decision any further. I know there's probably in this room a lot of fellows and researchers who know the case law even better than I. When I'm going to talk about the evolution of personal video recorders, how they have evolved in 30 years, I'm going to try to take a peek into the future of recorded television. I'm not going to talk about video, online video as such, user-created content. I'm going to talk about the future of television. I see there is a great potential in network video recorders. They can help to fix the television. get rid of all the problems that I posted in the beginning. There's a lot of room for innovation, but that innovation can also be blocked if the services are not carefully designed. About the history of television, the first television was aired over the air, solely through radio masts that broadcast a signal over the air. If you could see the radio mast, or if you were in the close vicinity, you could receive the programs. The antennas were owned by the networks, and shows were very local. At some point, the government decided that it will put halt to permissions of building new antennas, transmission antennas. So there was weird invention made by a company who thought that, hey, we'll just put these airplanes flying over the cities and they'll transmit the, we don't have to build another radio antenna. And having like 35 stripped down B-29 Super Fortresses flying around America, you could cover the whole continent. The idea is not a stupid one. We could improve it. Maybe we could have a whole coverage of USA for just using commercial airlines that are flying pretty high. We could reflect the signal back to ground. But that never really catch any wind, because in 10 years we had satellites. Satellites were first used to transmit TV programs between the stations. So NBC in New York would send using satellite programs to NBC in other areas. And but soon people started to also get these big dishes on their roofs and started capture the same signal watching satellite television. And so the broadcasters saw, or some entrepreneurs saw a business opportunity there as well, and started encrypting the signals and selling access to satellite as well. However, the satellite is kind of like follows the development of, okay, we build a tower, okay, we build even a higher tower, we put up an airplane, we put a satellite even higher. It's just that the tower keeps getting higher. The problem with the distributing television through over-the-air signal, satellite, airplane is that it's one-way media. It's broadcasted to everybody. You cannot do individual streams of programming. Then there's the other technology that's started as a community antenna television. So some of the areas that were hilly were in the valleys didn't receive television signal. So what the people there did, they built a common antenna on a hill and wired their homes to that antenna and shared the signal. And actually, first commercial community antenna was set up by these consumer electronics retailers who were selling TV sets. So if you have a valley and you have a TV store there, that none of the people who live in the valley can receive a television signal, it's not a good business model to try to sell them televisions. So what these television retailers did, they set up their own antenna and gave away a signal first, and they sold more TVs, and then they started charging for that access to that cable, and this was the birth of cable broadcasting business. Since then, cable companies have grown to be dominant way to deliver content to viewers, which is quite weird. I looked into, we got a cable at my home, but I looked into over-the-air signal, and I get more high-definition television with a better signal quality from over-the-air than I get with my basic cable. And it's free. So, but there's other benefits of cable, so you can put a lot of more content into cable broadcasts. You can control, you can send individual streams to viewers, and this makes it possible to have a lot more channels. And well, from the beginning it was clear that over-the-air regulation of filthy content, adult content, would not reach to cable. At least the regulation wasn't as harsh, so you could have adult entertainment, you could have other kind of content that was not available. So this development gave birth to a lot of TV channels that are not available over the air just through cable. But those channels, the cable companies had to make contracts with the television networks. They had to make licensing and distribution deals, and these distribution deals created a situation where the cable companies are actually dependent of networks, and networks who are only distributing through cable are dependent of the cable companies. And this effectively limits the innovation that's going to happen with the cable companies. If you're afraid that you'll piss off your content provider, you're not going to do something that's good for the consumer. Nevertheless, the contractual relationship has led to some innovation in the core. So, there's on-demand videos, which is pretty cool. The European cables to this date have very few programs available. However, here you can get almost all the series that were broadcasted in a couple few weeks, and there are other services like Time Warner Cable just launched service that enables viewers to watch shows from the beginning. So if you start viewing the show that's has been on for 15 minutes and you want to start from the beginning, you can just push a button and it will fetch the program. And there's also, the Time Warner also enables a service called Look Back. So you can start any show that was aired on certain channels during the same day. But after that day is done, so the next day the program won't be available. So I talked last week to one of the big cable network channels, and I asked them if they have any idea how to get their content to mobile phones or iPhones or mobile devices, and he said that only strategy is to use our cable companies to distribute it, because they don't want to make their cable distributors angry, because if they start independently distributing their content, then the cable companies will not give them as generous terms as they've given them before, because they lose exclusivity. So we're in a sort of stalemate situation, and at the same time the cable companies are afraid of pissing the content owners off, because they and their viewers rely on services that they provide. So it's no wonder that innovation in television has not progressed in a couple of years. However, the cable has given audience a great variety of channels. So it has done this mainly by adding intelligence into the network. So if you look at the internet, intelligence is at the edges, and the network is kind of stupid. But in a cable distribution, the approach is very different. Intelligence is in the middle, and it has enabled cable to block innovation at edge, and it has enabled them to keep a tight control of their content that's in the networks. So the incumbent actors in the market have a need to keep the control over the television and the business model that is dependent on that control, and they introduced several enhancements to television like DRM, broadcast flag, and they've litigated just about every technology that has entered the market that has threatened their current business model. One of them was, a couple of years ago, a American cable operator, Cablevision. They reported that they would start this service where a central network personal video recorder service would start. The way the system worked is that the viewers, the subscribers, would use their remote control at their home, and they would instruct their local PVR, or I don't think it was a PVR, it was a set-top box anyway. And the set-top box would take that signal, deliver it to a central recorder that would start recording the shows. And when the viewer wanted to watch the recorded shows, he would again instruct his set-top box, and the program would be fetched to that home set-top box. And for Cablevision, one of the advantages of this approach was that it would reduce the capital expenditure for each client, because currently the set-top boxes that are at your home given by cable companies, they cost a lot of money. They got big hard drives, even though most of that might be most of that storage space is not used. So having a central server where you would where every user would get just the storage amount that they really need would save Cablevision some money. So after hearing Cablevision's plans to launch this service, just about every network was in line to sue Cablevision. And that's what happened. NBC, Fox, Disney, you name it, sued Cablevision for direct copyright infringement. So what the court did, they looked at the how the system was designed. They found that every user had their own copy. So even if all of us would have asked to record an episode of Lost, there would be 25 copies of that Lost episode stored on that central server, and all of us would get access only to our own personal recording. So the court saw that if there's individual copies, it really doesn't matter if the copies are made at home, if they're made by with machines that are owned by somebody else. It just is enough if the user really instructs the recorder, and it's within fair use, or at least it's not a direct infringement. That what the court was saying. It didn't give an opinion about whether it was indirect infringement. But if we compare this decision to, say, mp3.com, where the mp3.com, what they did was they you could tell the system or that I own this record, and then you could get an access to one copy that was in a central server. The architecture was very different. MP3.com lost the case and is now history. The only bad thing about the decision was that it didn't proceed to Supreme Court, and now we don't have like strong case law.
They probably wouldn't have gotten sued idea. In the first place, actually.
Yeah.
Social Club Cable 2.0.
3.0, Doc. 3.0.
There's still the cable held to a lot of control over what the users do, because you had to use the set-top box to access those recordings, and that. And in a sense, it was a walled garden approach, although it was recording in a cloud. So that's how far the remote PVRs have come in the cable providers. And but we've had for quite a long time the home recorders. We've had TiVos, we've had Myth Television. The problem with those, Myth Television especially, and with just about any recorder at home, or starting from VCR, is that people can't program them. If it's too difficult, people just won't use it. And Linux, that has a pretty high threshold for regular people to start using. So we haven't seen too many Myth implementations at home. I know that there's a couple people here, but
there's some real Myth people here.
The single person who's
the user base of Myth TV.
Oh,
wow. Yeah. Yeah. Again.
How many people have TiVo running?
How many people's DVRs run Tor?
Now, maxed out the geek quotient.
How many people have TiVo?
Who? TiVo?
How many people have hacked their TiVo?
Who?
It's the same people.
How many people spent a year and a half and hundreds of dollars trying to get Myth TV working and are slightly bitter about it?
There you go. So the problem is that these Linux boxes, well, TiVo is a Linux box, but these home recorder Linux boxes are not user friendly. And if you want to hack TiVo, you have to have a screwdriver, you have to weld things, you have to... It's not hacker-friendly. It's not a produce that was designed to be hacked. It's not the produce that was meant to be controlled by viewers, by the users. And then there's the user-friendly Linux box TiVo. It's connected to internet nowadays, although it's a very walled garden approach. Again, you can order pizza with it, but you cannot access your recordings unless you have a special client program, which limits it. Again, you cannot share it with your friends. You cannot connect to other TiVo boxes unless they're in the same network. It won't enable users to control recorded programs or modify the code in the box. So it's no wonder if Free Software Foundation is not happy about it. So TiVo is market leader, partly because it had some help from rights owners. In 2001, Replay Television got sued. The product they had was almost identical to TiVo's product, except it had this feature, auto skip, which enabled you to skip commercials. Well, TiVo has the same kind of, it's called, what is it called? I don't have a TiVo, but you can skip commercial 30 seconds. Or it's not a fast
there's
forward.
There's a supported feature that you can program in using the remote,
right?
Using bizarre code, and then it skips forward 30 seconds.
Right.
But TiVo officially does not support it.
Yeah. So they had that feature. they got sued, the lawsuit called the feature that it's taking the lifeblood of most television channels, which is advertising. It also enabled sharing of programs with other replay TV owners. So because those boxes were connected, you could also connect the shows that your friends were, or watch the shows that your friends had taped. It was sort of limited peer-to-peer because it only enabled just some of your friends to be connected to your box. It wasn't unlimited. Then we got all sort of devices in our living room. If I would buy like all the boxes that are available in the market, I probably couldn't fit into my living room because there is boxes for receiving signal, transcoding it, receiving internet television, and one for networking, like connecting all those devices into to get the desirable effect. It's complicated. It requires using several softwares. There isn't just a single solution that would provide perfect television for you. But because television is digital today, and no digital product is perfect until it goes online, I'd say that in the near future, we're going to have somebody who's going to provide that recorder that's connected to online, to internet. And when recorders get connected, the users become connected. And connected users, they create social networks. And connected users in social networks will eventually lead to innovation at edge. People will start tinkering with their boxes if the boxes enable you to do that. I'd say that just like we saw in community antenna television, the early cable, we're going to see business opportunities where commercial ventures will host personal video recorders, just because it's kind of hard to get access to our current home recorders are not connected to networks that enable enough uplink. So even if I wanted to watch from my home recorder the HD television that I recorded, it probably wouldn't be enough bandwidth that my service provider is providing these days. So I'd say that there's no doubt that rights owners won't try to attack new technology. And so how do you protect your assets or your company against these attacks? Basically, you have to have stupid recorders that do nothing but record the shows and have smart open client programs that can be modified, that can be that do all the modification, the enrichment of the shows, and in this way, the television becomes part of those tubes that make internet, and hopefully in that development, we're gonna have like the 3G television. I don't know. People have talked, especially in Finland, where Nokia comes from, about having television in your cell phone, and 3G was supposed to be the great thing. But in US, 3G is considered, in television where it's considered to be girls, games, and God. So that's the things that really run internet. Those are the things that run television programs, business, and I think that we're going to see a lot of innovation in those three areas. We're going to see users start labeling shows. First, the ads will be labeled, and you can automatically skip. So in a sense, where some of the people who are using ad block don't see advertisements anymore in internet, so we're not going to see ads probably in television anymore. Then people are going to start labeling, tagging the content. So you could, with a you could choose to watch like what's all the hot girls of tonight's broadcast in 20 minutes. You wouldn't have to watch all the Baywatches, but you would get just the important stuff that's important to you. And the content would be linked. So if you watch Lost and you don't understand what people are hinting about, the purple smoke, so you could just see what other people have linked to previous episodes, and that you could jump and suddenly jump to that episode and suddenly understand what people are talking about, what they're referring. Then there's the gambling. That's one of the good things about having external additions to television, is that you can add all sort of, like, you could talk to your bookie, you could see the odds on the game, or you can play with your friends, trying to guess whether the team is going to make a field goal or what. But that's not actually good for recorded programs. Most of the programs that are aired are, it doesn't matter if they're live or not, but some of the programs like sports and, well, American Idols probably are the ones that we want to see live. So live television is not going anywhere. Users can help to decide what to watch and what also not to watch. So for a congregation, you could say that this is a this show is devilish, don't watch this. Or you can say that, hey, I'm gonna watch this show, and or half of your friends are watching the show, and you could program your recorder automatically according to that. So there has been studies in MIT done with this kind of technology to set up a Facebook television. Then there's also, if you include this kind of technology, and it creates a lot of privacy problems. So one MIT study found out that they could actually out gays on Facebook. So people who had not labeled themselves told that they're gay. Just because they were looking at their friends, they could say that this guy's gay, and they were the accuracy was very high. So if this kind of technology would get common, so if you haven't outed yourself and you're watching Fab Four, Fab Five, and your friends would see that they're or you're watching some adult entertainment, so there's some of the things must be kept hidden from other users. So another development is that it really doesn't make sense to, in economic way, to have individual recorders. It wastes resources like electricity, bandwidth, and hard drive space. So if we think about the Cablevision example, so if there's 100 people taping the same show, we're going to have 100-fold need for the hard drive space. So at some point, users will probably going to start sharing their resources. They're going to cluster their recorders. We're going to why to get recorded content from central server if your neighbor has it. It's a lot faster, takes a lot less resources, but this, of course, what got replay TV into trouble. So social television itself is not a new concept. People have tried to add social back to television. They've had all sort of split screens where you can chat away, auto racing is going, but television is a lean-back experience. And for live television, for any television, I wouldn't want to share my my screen estate with my friends saying that, hey, that was pretty cool. And that having a keyboard in your lap when you're sitting and trying to watch television, it just doesn't work. So the social actually has to be before the show and after the show. And this is why the recorded television is really good for social television. And it's really good for mobile television as well. So we've had all these attempts to get television into these things. But if your recordings are accessible online, then they're accessible with these things, and it's easy to get them into these things after that. Then there's the question of what happens to advertisements. It's a television, this far has been a social contract. You get to watch free television if you watch ads. You can ignore the ads, you can even skip them, but without ads, the TV stars wouldn't get salaries, and soon we would not have television. So again, there would be benefits for advertisers as well, having good statistics of what people are watching, when, where, how much. The Nielsen ratings, I've heard, have nothing to do with accuracy these days anymore. Having an access to your social network, again, that would enable advertisers to provide meaningful ads, ones that people want to watch, and that could actually benefit also the advertisers. But my message was that we're going to see a lot more connected TV recorders, which can basically, with the aid of social networks, help to fix the television. But there's a way to stop it, and I'm open to suggestions, to discussion from this on. Thank you.
You're presenting a sort of a very compelling vision of what's almost the opposite network to the internet, right? So if we think of the internet, we've had a network which is dumb in the middle, and in fact we may legislate it to keep it dumb in the middle, smart on the edges, open to a great deal of publishing and innovation from all sorts of edge figures, but fairly difficult for someone to monetize in the middle of an accepting commodity businesses. Television's been the opposite, right? You know, it's largely been controlled by a small number of content providers, a small number of infrastructure providers who have enormous vested interests and armies of extremely toothy lawyers. You seem to be hoping for a future where those things invert for the simple reason that the consumers want it. There's no real evidence that consumers have ever gotten anything that they wanted on television in the past. What do you think is going to change that?
Well, we're just going to need some brave entrepreneurs who are willing to test whether the Sony Betamax decision will hold in the digital world as well. Because having networked recorders really isn't that different from VHS or Betamax. Only thing is that you have a really long SCART cable that you can connect to, except when it starts getting to the next level with file sharing and connecting peers, then the whole infrastructure changes as well. But I think that taking baby steps, seeing the first services out there who like Cablevision who won in a court, I think that a lot of propeller heads are thinking of setting up these new services, and we're going to see a wave of them in the near future. But I think we're going to see as well a wave of litigation. You were next.
Minor, not a big picture question, but just when you were talking for a minute about the keyboard in your lap and how really the interaction needs to be before or after the show, I think that that's wrong. I think that, I mean, not from our perspective, not from my perspective, but from a generational perspective. Because I can't tell you, like, how many times my 9-year-old watches TV while talking to her 11-year-old cousin on the phone discussing the show that they're watching. I mean, if there was a way that they could do it, not now, but as they get older online, I just absolutely think that they would. And I think that kids now, you know, a generation or even half a generation younger would are going to be doing that. So I think that as it develops, I think the interaction is going to be more pervasive.
That's true. In a sense, voice works with, you know, watching television, but typing anything, sharing
the screen. I don't know. Because maybe you have multiple screens, or maybe you have.
Yeah.
I'm just questioning. You know,
I don't know. Would it work for you guys to share the screen?
I think it would for them. I mean, looking at what they're used to seeing when they look at an online environment, I get confused by it because I'm old. But, you know, I think that many people in this room don't. And I think that certainly, kids, you know, people the generation younger really don't and won't going forward.
So have you watched Justin TV? So there's... Justin TV is made for broadcasting, rebroadcasting live television online. So I've been watching Formula One races from there. And when the race is really bad, there's nothing interesting happening. It's really interesting to read the comments. They're the most interesting part. The other users are bashing, like, the drivers. But that's not I wouldn't want that to happen when I'm watching a film. On the screen.
But your kids might.
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah.
It seems like there's two arenas of innovation, though. The stuff you're talking about is the stuff that the cable companies are going to do, because they're the only ones, first of all, they control the means, and second of all, they have more anti-toothy lawyers who'll fight about how many copies of a particular show you have to have. And then there's the stuff that's happening in the IP world, where you've got Geekbox and Boxy and, you know, Myth TV, a million different people building, you know, TV, either integrated TV, which means it's got a cable card in it, or just pure IP TV. I mean, Hulu Desktop is wonderful. I haven't had a TV for years, but all of a sudden I get to watch all the stuff that I watched when I was, you know, 10 years old, and the stuff my mom wouldn't let me watch when I was 5 years old. I'm having a great time. To me it seems like the real excitement's on the IP world, where suddenly you can have stuff, you know, since it's no longer sequential and you get random access, you can have an enormous content and you can do pretty much anything you want with it based on all the innovation that's happened in the other areas of the internet. So, I mean, it seems to me there's really two different arenas.
So there's
different
innovation at edge and innovation in core. And innovation in core is very slow, while the innovation at edge is progressing really fast.
Well, for one thing, the innovation on the edge sometimes can ignore law, which innovation in the core can't.
That's true. Yep.
I was going to mention, in part, the response to this gentleman's question. It seems that there's people that view TV, a television set, like intricately tied with the broadcasting medium, and then there's others who view it as a big monitor. And so it seems like we might, you know, say, like, which is going to happen, you know, are the content providers all of a sudden going to want to do what the consumer wants? Probably not, but the internet seems to be a means where we could just bypass that altogether. The question I have is, if that does happen, well, first, do you think that's going to happen? And second, will the quality kind of decline? There seems to be this debate, like, if we kind of open it up to everybody, I mean, where we kind of work around these content providers, are we going to not see these shows, you know, these quality productions? Is it going to be more like YouTube style, or, yeah.
I think that's a real concern, that if we start skipping, if everybody would have a recorder that enables you to skip commercials, then advertisers would not use television as a mean to distribute their stuff.
What about premium channels?
Well, premium channels, yeah, that's one way to go. And there's a way to get premium content. In Finland, we pay about 200 euros a year, and we got four channels though. Well, close to 10, I guess. But we got all the HBO series, we got new movies, no interruptions, we got Olympics. So that's a one way to go forward. But that would mean that that business model wouldn't support 200 channels or 1,000 channels that are out there. But I'm not sure if that's a good thing or not. I know Carolina, for example, likes to watch Brazilian television. So again, without having 1,000 channels, that wouldn't be possible.
I mean, I think it's more likely that just commercials, advertisements will change. I mean, they'll be integrated into programs so that you can't skip them. I mean, either that or broadcast TV goes away.
Well, you could, I was talking about a scenario where you could actually do a labels inside the show. So if there's a product placement that's really annoying, you just automatically skip that. It's not that you can just skip commercials that are labeled as commercials. So,
as long as there's no dramatic content tied into that.
That's true, yeah.
So following up on sort of Ethan's question about what's different in television, there are a lot of forces that seem to drive television centralized, the infrastructure investments, the cost of producing this mass programming, and sort of along with that centralization comes a sort of control against innovation at the edges. So is television going to change, or is television going to be changed by people sharing other kinds of content and things from the edges and voting with their attention away from the mass-produced content?
So I'd say that it was about 3 years ago when the broadcast flag was cast away. But if technology, if every one of us would have an access to a network recorder that would enable us to change the television, I would say that broadcast flag would be reintroduced and the business models would be changed. So I don't know. Do you have an idea?
Well, I see myself turning away from broadcast media and finding the interactively produced things more interesting, the things that I can help shape or that my friends have shaped or that come from conferences and other smaller productions of information seem more interesting than the big mass.
I think the big audiences still demand the layback experience of turning your brains off and watching some Hollywood stuff, and that's not going to be produced in conferences or interactively.
So that phenomenon, sitting back while your brain is turned off, persisted for about 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
Why should it persist for the next 50 years? Before that, we had front porches, we had fireplaces, we had patios, you know. I mean, among people...
We had conversations.
Among, the interesting thing to me is that, and I'm sure the statistics back this up, the internet's eating into television, especially with younger people. The amount of narcotic television watching is actually going down. If this is... There's a lot of it. There's just on YouTube, and a lot of that's far more interactive. What's interesting to me is that as high def has come along, YouTube low def has become more standard, even to the degree that most people don't even know what high def looks like. They don't know whether they're getting standard def or high def. We found that out when we were renting our house out. People don't know the difference at all. They're paying a lot for a house. I'm just wondering whether the framing, the persistence of television as we know it, is the right frame to be using, or is it, or the only, or rather the only frame?
To me, that's a question of also timing. You know, because in large part, I think there's a strong argument that it's just cultural lag. And we still, I mean, it's just inertia. People try to look, and like advertisers spend tons of money to reach people who are totally irrelevant to what they're trying to accomplish. And you can find, you know, you find people.
And haven't you going to keep doing that? I mean,
yeah,
you know,
not.
The advertisers
but the question
are
is how long it takes to, for the
you know, the evening news is being killed off by the
right.
by the end of the, and most evening news on television has been paid for by car companies. That's out of here. A lot of
yes.
these guys are going out of business now. They're shutting off the 11 o'clock news or.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's just a fraction of what it used to be. It's 3 minutes of something.
Yeah.
I don't know. To me, the most interesting thing about the infrastructure is the empty space in the buildings. I think you're right on with that. I think something else needs to go in cable company plant where their central locations are, and for that matter, with the phone companies as well. They have big empty buildings where switches used to be. What can go in that space? There's all kinds of IP-related stuff, internet protocol-related stuff. They're most of them are on fat backbones. The cable companies I know don't get their signals off the air. They get them by fiber, and there's backup with off the air or something like that. For the most part, it's distributed by fiber. As more people, the best-looking picture you can get on a high-def screen right now comes from your camcorder. It doesn't come from cable or satellite. So what happens is people start producing more movies and mashing the stuff up and having fun with it. There's a lot of business in the back end of that, I would think, for the cable companies. You know, use our render farms. You know, you want to do CGI? You know, why go to Hollywood for that? To me, that's just a huge, you know, help invent the new Hollywood. I think it's inevitable, actually. So.
They're doing that in Plymouth.
They're doing that where?
In Plymouth.
Mass?
Yeah. The Plymouth Rock Studios just got $500 million to build the most advanced sound stage in the world down in Plymouth, Mass. And they do daily, what do they call them? They don't call them webcasts, but webisodes. They're producing all of this kind of stuff that they're putting out over the web before they've even started operating. They're just beginning to build things. But they're
wow. So are the local citizens chiming in with helping out?
I don't know that piece yet.
Yeah.
It was 2 days ago they got $500 million to build. They closed the deal for the $500 million to build
wow.
the whole facility. And they happen to be a client, which is a good thing for me. But I think... I think that things, just the wired, wireless things, we need to try to figure out and that as to how it might develop. But there are very simple examples to me that we can learn from. For example, one of the companies where I ran was a telephone company, simple telephone company. We give you a dial tone. And what we promise is your bill will always be lower than Verizon. But much more importantly, is we'll give 4% of our revenues to your schools. Well, that is a bit difficult economic model, but cable made it doable because we could use the head ends to select where we were, make the economics work for us. And so we needed to have people who were reasonably affluent, not terribly affluent, but be able to focus on people with kids in school, interest in schools, willing to do things with regard to schools. It's the only way it worked. Well, that's one thing if you're doing something over wires, you can do is be very selective and distributive. But we haven't thought that through at all, I don't think.
Maybe I wasn't paying attention in the beginning, but I'm still curious as to your main research question, as to this. I mean, you outline a certain development, but mm-hmm. What is the main investigation into that you're focusing on?
So what I'm interested of is that when the recorders get connected, what's going to happen? What kind of innovation are we going to get? If we're going to get, as I... I'm I'm waiting to happen. It's going to be the innovation at edge. Is that stoppable by some the core innovators? Is there a way to stop the development of sort of what you said there was about the treating the television as only a mere display, where it's not a receiver even anymore. You have to connect it with a set-top box or a computer, and those computers, the set-top boxes, they receive programming, and that's digital. So in a sense, it's just a way to get programming to internet when the recorders, the receivers are connected. So what's going to happen after that? What are the reactions of rights owners, and what's going to happen to their business?
I'm taking another route, I think.
Okay, so this one is also changes topics a little bit. So if we want to stimulate the growth of good TV, I'm going to call it for the moment, interactive, open, et cetera, on the internet, then one of the arguments is that, well, we have to make sure that the TV experience arrives without jitter and is as good as high def and as reliable as what you get over cable TV. And therefore, we need to make sure that TV bits take precedence over bits in applications that are not as time dependent, like email. And so this is an argument against net neutrality, that to stimulate TV over the internet, we really need to have a non-neutral network that realistically acknowledges the requirements of video. What do you think?
I don't actually believe in that, because if you think about recorded television, it's already recorded. You're not going to... It really doesn't matter if you see it, if there is a delay of 1 second of you receiving it.
In the middle of the stream?
Well, you wanna have a good stream, or you don't actually have to have a stream. You can just download the whole thing and start watching from the beginning when it's downloaded enough. So I don't see that. People do want the high definition stuff, but it's not crucial to have a network that is not neutral for that. It could be done otherwise. For example, I have a service that is in Finland, and what it does, it basically I have a box there that records everything that comes from those 10 channels. It does it for 2 weeks, and after that, after a 2 week, it just there's a moving buffer. So I got 2 weeks of television programs there. So I can watch it. I use my Miro to download content, because the shows are broadcasted during the morning, which is like early morning, or during the night in Europe, which is early morning. So I'll have the programs when it's night here, and I can watch them on my Apple. So it really doesn't make a difference whether I get it instantaneously, whether the quality of that delivery is good or bad, because they will be on my hard drive, because I'm in control of those. I don't have to just take the stream that would be the only option for cable vision.
I was just thinking right now, it's looking at the title of your talk, is that you're talking about social enrichment of television. However, it seems that what you're talking about has almost nothing to do with television in the end. There's nothing television-like about the picture you're putting ahead in front of us. There is no like broadcasting. There is no one-directional programming. There is no kind of the business model don't seem to work. We're probably not even going to be using those sets. We're just going to be using our computers or whatever we have at hand. So in the end, it seems like dissolving what television is. So I wonder whether instead of talking about social enrichment of television, we should be talking about visual enrichment of the social dimension of the internet or something like that. I think that looking at what you're talking about
from this side, from the like the side of the internet, might shed more light on what's going on than if you look at it from the old thing, because we also, when we talk about television, it seems that it's very clear and there's like some kind of tangible thing that gets transformed in a process. But actually, if you look at different traits of what television is or was supposed to be, none of them seem to be present in that future that you're picturing. So why not look at it from the other side?
For example, I have like two cases, but they are in Brazil, so the US, America, reality is probably different.
Yeah.
There are, they transform some programs in kind of snapshots, like short, and they adapt it, so they are transmitting via cell phone. But the thing that they are most transmitting is soccer, soccer games.
And the highlights of soccer games.
Highlights from like 30 seconds, 1 minute. And the amount of money the telecom companies are making, because they are the people that receive this money and then pay the content provider, is amazing, it's huge. Mm. And so I wanted to bring this. Maybe the realities of some other places are a little different because you don't have that exclusive license with the cable or the distributor. Mm. And another thing implementing Fernando would be, for example, how do you see Hulu or things like that today? That they don't bring, they, like, you see the program you want to see, they have the 30, 20, 16 seconds advertisement. It is closed, it's not open, but still, if you are migrating, and they have some community features, very low actually, like the most viewed or the most popular or whatever. So, I don't know, how do you see exactly like this other, through this other angle that Fernando was saying? Mm.
I'll start with your question, because the idea of television, it's what I started. It's local, it's broadcasted one time, you have to be there. So the idea of making that experience better, but still enjoying the benefits of getting local content, getting, for example, I having an access to, say, NFL games in Europe can be very difficult, but because it's locally broadcasted, there's probably through internet you can get that, but getting it to your television is another thing. So I'd say that it's taking television and treating, my approach is taking television and treating it as a part of internet, making it that core control into edge control. So Carolina's question about the Hulu, it's taking some of the advantages of the edge approach, but it's still very much core control and the core innovation. You can do only what the rights owners want you to do. And I think what we're seeing, what we're going to see is a big shift of control from the rights owners to consumers. And there's going to be a lot of waves because of this development. I think this would be a good time to wrap up here.
Thanks.
Thank you.